You're listening to Raising Anchor, the Rhode Island FC podcast, now part of the Blazing Musket family. We're glad you're here. Hello and welcome to Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. I'm your host, Matt Entrekin, and joining me as the very first guest of this new year is the one and only, when he's not busy with his Everything is Pro Wrestling podcast, the face and the voice behind all of your in-game entertainment between the Providence Friars men's basketball team and, of course, your Rhode Island FC, Josh Flanagan, a.k.a. Flanny. Josh, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the new year. How have your holidays been?
Amazing, Matt. Amazing. Thank you. First of all, thank you for the introduction. I need to like hire you and bring you everywhere with me, because I can't give that introduction. So thank you for that. That was very, very nice and awesome. But no, holidays have been amazing. Always super appreciative of this time. I think as we get older and older, we appreciate these times a little more. But no, super, super thankful to just be around loved ones and also just have a moment to take a deep breath and be able to jump right into 2025.
You know, there's that time between Christmas and New Year's where people can't really track what they're doing, how they're getting through the week.
I don't know what day it is today, Matt. I have no idea. I have no clue.
Do you have any specific traditions around this time that you like to have for family and loved ones?
Not specific. Between this time, not necessarily. The cool thing is, you know, the holidays are great, being that my wife is Spanish. So she's Puerto Rican and Dominican. So it's amazing around the holidays we get to spend. And obviously, they celebrate Noche Bueno the night before, you know, Christmas Eve. And then my family, we celebrate traditionally on Christmas. So it's awesome to not have to kind of split between families and be able to just spend time with everyone. And then really, you know, what her and I look to do between this time is just kind of, again, rest, recalibrate. You know, her birthday is on the 5th of January. So in terms of like me having to think about gifts and timing and all of that, we jump right back into it. But usually the, you know, between Christmas and New Year's is usually some downtime. And then, you know, the fun thing will be, you know, on New Year's Eve, getting to be at PC and bringing the new year with Friartown will be fun as well. So
no penguin plunge to start the New Year's off.
No, thanks. Thank you. No, I don't know that my body will. It might take me until we kick off the next season to thaw out if we do that. So
so let's get into this, because I think this is going to be just some of the most fun that we can ever have on this podcast. And before we talk about your very established career here in the sports complex of Rhode Island, I want to just kind of take a step back and ask you, because I feel like you were a local legend before the Providence gig, before the Rhode Island FC gig. What's your background? What's your connection? What's your history with the Ocean State?
So born and raised, I'm a bucket boy, as we'd like to say. I've been born and raised in Pawtucket my entire life. I grew up right on Mineral Spring Avenue, directly across the street from Slater Junior High School. You know, that was kind of my upbringing. I've been in Pawtucket. It wasn't until just a couple of years ago, I now moved over to Central Falls, where my wife resides, and where she grew up. So we're here now. You know, as you know, Matt, you know, Pawtucket and Central Falls might as well be one big community in terms of how they embrace one another and how they are just so similar in the sense of community. So I've been here my entire life. You know, I graduated from URI. Don't tell the PC folks that. I try to keep that on the hush as much as I can, you know, but a proud, you know, URI grad, you know, so spent my whole life here. I've been here, you know, all 35 of my years now have been in Rhode Island, and absolutely love it. You know, I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. I'm super proud to be from here, you know, not only just Pawtucket, but Rhode Island as a whole. You know, I think, you know this, we have this kind of air to us of like, you know, we're the smallest state, but, you know, we get a lot of great things done. And just have a lot of amazing folks. And one thing I like to see, I know a lot of people use the term melting pot, but I'm going to steal the term from a good buddy of mine, Chachi Carvalho, who's an actual Rhode Island and Pawtucket legend. He calls it a mixing bowl. And I think that's a perfect way to sum up our community and our state. You know, we all take a little bit of what we're good at, put it all together, and it makes something amazing. And that's kind of the sense of pride I have, not only for my community in Pawtucket and Central Falls, but the state as a whole. It's really just made me who I am, good, bad, or indifferent, and I wouldn't change that.
Are you the guy that has, and you got to be honest here, are you the guy that has that bumper sticker, "I never leave Rhode Island"?
I don't. No. It's, ironically enough, the only bumper sticker on my car is the RIFC sticker. That's it. And that's the only thing that would have honestly made it onto my car, if we're being honest.
That's the correct answer. Yeah. So then let's talk about the gig that you got with the Providence Friars, especially now knowing this juicy secret that's been added into it. How did you fall into that? That seems like such a niche opportunity. What's the background in you becoming kind of a local legend in emceeing and being the face of the Providence Friars men's basketball team?
So ironically enough, the PC gig came kind of sprouted from the early, very, very early days of doing some work with RAFC. So the PC gig did come first in the sense of this is now year two at the AMP with all of the amazing folks in Friartown. But that opportunity actually sprouted from the very, very early work I was doing with RIFC. I got to give a huge shout out to my man, Mike Rea, who's been awesome and a huge support to me in the last couple of years. It's just kind of a mentor in the comm space. You know, I do have a communications degree from URI. So I've used that a little bit, but this is obviously the last couple of years is when I've really been able to lean into that a lot more outside of just my day-to-day job as an educator. So Mike, you know, obviously I got to give some more love to Harry Grigsby, John Hope, who was the MC at PC for so long. And he did an amazing job. He stepped down a couple seasons ago to pursue some other things. The job opened up and it was actually Mike who sent me the posting. It was just a tweet. It was like, hey, we're looking for our new in-game host. You know, apply here. Mike sent it to me and he's like, you would be amazing for this. You have to jump at this opportunity. That all kind of came together. Mike was a huge support there. Also, Peter Baptista, I got to give him a huge shout out. Through his connections at PC was very supportive to me as well, just off the strength of Mike, you know, sharing my name. Like many things, it kind of came together on a golf course, very, I guess, Rhode Island or just of a certain ilk there. But so that's kind of how PC came together. But honestly, PC wouldn't have come to fruition if it wasn't for the support and the opportunities in those very, very formative days of RAFC.
So let's talk about that time, because I remember I didn't know you yet at the time, but you were kind of everywhere in the RAFC landscape and that space before the signings of general manager Paul Byrne or President Brett Louis at the time. You know, I still look at even like the merch shop has you with like the hat tucked down. Yeah. You know, you were kind of doing a little bit of everything. How did you get connected specifically to RAFC? Was it because the stadium and the club was going to be coming into Pawtucket, or were you a soccer fan at heart and like you just kind of gravitated towards that? What was the origin story for that?
Yeah, so in a very unique Rhode Island way, right? I just happened to be in a room, you know, this time a Zoom room. With some other folks for my day job. You know, I work my day job at Onward We Learn, formerly the College Crusade, where we work with amazing young men and women and their families through all of our urban court districts on Rhode Island. And we were actually going through a name change. So we were going from the College Crusade ultimately to Onward We Learn. And we were working with the amazing folks at NAIL in Providence. And they were kind of giving us our new name. And concurrently, we're working with, you know, the unnamed professional soccer club coming to Rhode Island. So just being in their space, naturally, we just started to talk. And I got to give a huge shout out to both Miles and Chris over at NAIL, who were extremely supportive in those early days. And just kind of started, just having conversations, getting to know one another, our backgrounds. I think it actually sprouted with me saying, oh, I'm from Pawtucket. And I just really love sports and soccer, you know, as well. And they were like, oh, well, actually, in this other room, we're working on this other project. Would you love to help us out or even just, you know, see, you know, get a little bit of insight inside baseball on what's happening and see how you can be supportive to us. I jumped at the opportunity in very early days. It was just, you know, the listening sessions and the sessions they were doing in the community to really get a feel for, you know, what is the pulse of this team going to be? How is this going to tick with the community behind it? So that kind of sprouted into a really cool opportunity in about August of 2022, where it was time to start to put some video and some images and some things starting to come together with our colors and our crest and ultimately the team name. And from that came an opportunity to do a voiceover. I had never in my life done a voiceover before. You know, obviously I knew what it was, but I had never done anything like that. And to Miles and Chris's credit, just organically them talking to me and getting a feel for who I am and what I was about, they were like, hey, we think you might be really good for this opportunity. Would you be interested in just doing a voiceover? We'll give you a script and something to read. We just kind of want to hear how it sounds. And the cool thing, and I think you know this about me, Matt, I try to be a very humble guy, but it was really fun to hear that some, you know, really A-list actors were in for this read of this voiceover, and they just didn't think it sounded Rhode Island. It didn't sound authentic. It sounded like, you know, just this person here who looks the part and sounds the part, but it wasn't authentic to who we are here in the Ocean State. And they must have enjoyed the read. And next thing you know, I'm in Walpole, Mass. in this fine gentleman's attic doing a voiceover. And it kind of, it came together that organic. And that's kind of how all of this really sprouted and how I got the opportunity to be a part of the club and have an impact.
You know, fun story. I actually also, I knew of you before I realized I knew of you. And that's because I wrote the script for the jersey reveal. So a lot of people don't know this.
I ended up
writing that script. And when the club gave me the permission to do it, they said, hey, we want to be clear. We know that you're a podcast guy, but you will not be, you won't be reading this out. You're writing it for someone else. We have a very authentic voice for how we want this to come out. And I was like, okay, I didn't think of it at the time. I didn't realize who you were yet. But yeah, I was told very early on who the authentic sound for Rhode Island, specifically Pawtucket, but also Rhode Island was. So you nailed it in every way possible on that.
No, kudos to you. The script was amazing. I say this and I do not joking. I'm not just saying this because I'm here, but I remember reading it and getting goosebumps and just those first lines and going through and, you know, it felt it. It was palpable. And at the time, you know this, there was nothing to see visually, right?
Like we
were just kind of in our head figuring out what we wanted this to look like or what we would hope this looked like. And it was, it just felt authentic. And I know that's a word I probably say a lot, but it really, I think, summed up who we are and what we are here. Not only just our soccer community, but our community as a whole. And it was so cool. You know, I have vivid memories of, again, being in that gentleman's attic. I forget his name, but he was amazing. I think he worked at NBC for a very long time and had some really cool equipment and some things that we had a great conversation. And the folks from Nail came and joined us and made me feel very comfortable. And they made me feel like I belonged. I think at that time I had a bit of a sense of imposter syndrome of like, should I really be in this space? Am I the person that they want for this? I'm just a kid from Pawtucket. But I think as we've seen over the last couple of years, that's what they were looking for. And that's what, you know, with all of us who've been able to be a part of this, I think that was the goal. And I think, you know, in all of our different ways, we've really been able to just add a piece to the puzzle. And we've seen how the puzzles come together over the last couple of years.
Yeah. And, you know, I really want to touch base on, speaking of as these things come together, we're going to touch base on Tidewater towards the end of the episode here. But, you know, growing up in Pawtucket, how important was it that this club came online here in the city of Pawtucket versus anywhere else? Because I look at like, I've seen you kind of get involved with the community revitalization side of things. I know how hard Mayor Grebian has worked on making sure, not just Grebian, but everyone else along the way to get this to happen. Is this the transformational push that Pawtucket needs to enter its next, I don't know, whatever you want to call it? Like, it couldn't have gone anywhere else, right? The stadium, this club was always going to have to live and breathe inside the city of Pawtucket.
I think so, wholeheartedly. And I know in some ways, you know, especially for folks who maybe aren't from Pawtucket, but, you know, who would frequent McCoy Stadium, right? I think a lot of times, naturally, you know, this project has been tied to that project in some ways. And in some ways, maybe not organically or the right way, and folks using it in different ways. But I think for me, that's what it was. You know, I have vivid memories as a kid. My mom still lives, you know, on Rhode Island Avenue, directly across the street from McCoy Stadium. From her front porch, we can see the outfield and scoreboard. And I spent so much of my formative years there. And again, it was baseball growing up, and I loved baseball. And I had so many great times there, but it was community. It was just being able to go there and the fireworks on the 4th of July and all the different events. It was a destination for not only folks in Pawtucket, but folks, I think, throughout Rhode Island and in Massachusetts to come and really just find something that they enjoyed together and build that sense of community. And when that was gone, it left a void. And I think you mentioned just the revitalization of the city as a whole. And everyone knows the Apex building. And, you know, I remember as a kid looking at it and it reminded me of, you know, I'm sure you remember this, Guts, the TV show, and the Agro Crag. And Apex was our Agro Crag.
The super Agro Crag?
Yes, the super Agro. That's what it was for us, you know, seeing it every day. And, it, you know, we mentioned now what's happening in Apex and just downtown. The revitalization that we're seeing now, you know, thanks to Mayor Grebian, it's been awesome to see. And I think it's really been a shot in the arm to the city. And I think naturally because of that, you know, it's, you feel those vibrations throughout other cities. So for me, there's really no other place it could have gone. And I still think back to December 2nd, 2019, seeing that press release, seeing that and being like, oh my God, this is happening. It's coming to Pawtucket. And even at first being like, it's going where? Like, it's going there where all of these things are that I've seen my whole life driving over the Division Street Bridge, but I didn't know what that really was or what was there. And I remember reading that and being like, oh, wow, this is happening. And it felt like a shot in the arm, you know, to a city that really needed it. And I think in a lot of ways still needs it, and it's still growing, to your point. But I think, you know, it's going to be the launching pad for, you know, whatever, to your point, whatever is next for the city. And I couldn't be happier to see it coming to fruition. Selfishly, obviously, it's going to be so nice being down the street and, you know, literally being able to walk there. And, you know, I drive by it almost every day on the way home to work, you know, visiting my mom. And, you know, I'll never forget, before anything was there, looking and being like, oh, wow, there's going to be a beautiful stadium and a professional soccer team here, right in literal my backyard. And I couldn't imagine it being anywhere else. And I think now, as folks have seen all the passion from folks in Pawtucket and kind of how we tick and what runs through our blood, I couldn't imagine it being anywhere else.
You know, it's the community part, I think, is the key here, right? Because, like, I've already seen online there are fans that are starting to organize, like, bicycle rides, like, coordinating, like, the timed event of riding their bicycles from multiple starting points around, you know, within reason. Obviously, you're not going to be riding from, like, Westerly to the, if you are, that's more power to you.
Bravo to you.
But, you know, going back to that community part, do you think that, you know, because there's, let's be honest, let's address the elephant in the room. There have been some holdouts within the community, whether they are the noisy minority or there is a wave of people that are still remaining skeptical because of the history of business within the state of Rhode Island. You know, you said it, though, it's community. Do you think, is it more just they need to see it? They need to be able to experience it live in Pawtucket? Because North Smithfield was a great first year. And for the diehards and for the people that really love soccer, that was, they would have gone anywhere to support the team. But to your point, you know, I went to a couple of PawSox games in my lifetime, but I was never a PawSox fan, right? It was just something to do. It was to be a part of that community. Do you think that there's going to be a natural kind of migration into this because this becomes their next community, this becomes their next community center? Or is there a bridge, a gap that we need to educate to teach people the sport of soccer and get them, like, unstuck from their baseball ways?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. And I think the harder part is probably just getting people to come to the table. And I think I think a lot of the conversations I've had, including my own family members, right, who just grew up in, you know, baseball's America's pastime, et cetera, and all these different things, that's not the case anymore. Soccer is our sport, you know, here in not only the state, but in our country. And it's just growing and growing by the day. You figure, you know, the U.S. is the soccer capital of the world, you know, last summer, these next couple summers, if that's the case. So I think that timing really, really helps us in a sense of everyone is talking about it. You can't really get away from it. But we also know how some of our neighbors can be around here. They have to see it to believe it. And I think we've seen that start to happen this year. You know, obviously the success on the field helps that, right, and buoys it and makes it happen a lot quicker. But I think just people showing up to a game and showing up to a match, you know, you've seen it being there. You know, that's my favorite part of the job, is just seeing those folks and every day having those conversations, and really just helping that light bulb come on for folks. And you would see it where maybe parents would bring their kids because the kids just wanted to come, similar to like McCoy Stadium. It's a family fun day. It's an outing. It's something fun to do in the community. And I think the kids are naturally going to jump at it, but sometimes the parents need to be educated or need to understand it. I think the club has done an amazing job of doing that work and really just tying themselves into the community and being a grassroots effort and really involving. So regardless of who you are and how you tick, there's something for you. You know, whether you're coming to the game and you just want to enjoy, you know, a great beer, we have that for you. You want to enjoy that camaraderie of just being with, you know, with your buddies or being with family, we have that. Or if, to your point, if you're a diehard and you don't take your eyes off that pitch for not 1 second of that 90, it's for you. So I think the club has done an amazing job. I think throughout the year, we've seen it grown. You know, I think of like the Facebook comments at the beginning of the year, how skewed they were, good to bad. And now you look at them today and it's not even close in terms of the pendulum of the good to the bad. You look at some of those like AI summaries on the comments, and before they didn't really know what to make of it. Now it's all positive and great and exciting. And you see just the number of comments grow that are positive to maybe negative or even just skeptical. And I understand people being skeptical of something new and something different, you know, especially something that involves so much money and the undertaking that a project like this does, you know, especially for people who are just comfortable and for lack of better terms, stuck in their ways. But I think, you know, obviously the success on the pitch has, you know, accelerated that. But I think people are really coming around and understanding, similar to PawSox, if you weren't a baseball fan, it was just as something fun to do and something in your community to really hold on to and a sense of pride. I think that's the cool thing. You know, I think about the crest and everything. It's like, that's something you can have. I remember being on my honeymoon and having the gear on and being in different parts of the country. It just, it's a really cool conversation piece and an additional sense of pride of who you are and where you're from. And I think regardless of if you're a sports fan or a soccer fan, that's something you can rally around just as an individual. And I think that's the real cool part about this project and what this has done to just our community overall.
I think maybe being the in-game host is not your calling. It sounds like you need to be the spokesperson as well. And that ties perfectly into, I guess I want to ask, you know, you were into this project so early in its infancy. Did you always know that what you're doing now for the club is exactly what you wanted to be doing? Or was this just like the thing that was offered and you jumped on it?
Exactly that. I mean, I knew again from the time the press release started and by 2019, and I have to say this and we'll probably get in this, but I have not been a soccer fan my whole life. It wasn't until 2006, and I have very, very vivid memories on how it came to be that I became a soccer fan. Like most things, you know, when you're I was 16 at that point, you know, it was a young lady who got me into soccer, not because of the soccer, but that's kind of how things started. So, but by 2019, diehard soccer fan. You know, I love soccer. It was something I eat, sleep, and breathe. You know, from Sky Sports back in the day, and I remember some of the early days of watching soccer before I even had a favorite team, and watching, you know, AC Milan and guys like Andre Shevchenko, just being like, wow, this guy's really good. This is fun. So by 2019, I was all in. And I remember reading, I was like, okay, I want to be a part of this. And it could have just been as a fan. In those first couple of formative years when, you know, slowly the pieces were coming together, you know, we take a step forward and two steps back and then three steps forward and two steps back. And there was a lot of uncertainty, naturally. But kudos to everyone and the brain trust behind it. So by then, I just knew I wanted to be a part of this. I had no idea what it was going to look like or sound like. And it could have just been a fan and I would have been totally fine with that. But again, thanks to the folks at Nail and thanks to, you know, you mentioned the folks who were there in the early days of RAFC, that foundation, they really gave me the opportunity to just be me. And they were like, hey, we're looking for someone who just has a passion for this and it's authentic for them. And I thankfully was lucky enough to be the person in that space. It could have been anyone. And I'm super appreciative and thankful for that each and every day. There isn't a time that goes by at an event that I don't, you know, make it a point to go up to every one of those folks who've given me that opportunity, look them in the eye and say thank you. And I can't say it enough. And I'm always at service to the club, whether I'm here in a official role or not. So I didn't know what it was going to be, but I knew I wanted to be a part of it. And thankfully, just through those connections and folks believing in me and giving me, you know, that opportunity, here I am today. And who knows what the future entails. And, you know, like you mentioned, and similar to you, I'm down to do anything for the club that benefits it and helps move it forward. And make it what I think we all hope it can be. And I think also what we've seen it can be.
Yeah. You know, I've said that from the beginning when I got the opportunity to do the public address, it was like, I'll do it. And if you find something different that benefits the continued evolution of this club, I'd hate to lose it. But like, at the same time, I just want to see this be successful. It's interesting. Your origin story sounds a lot like mine when it comes to fandom of soccer, because I too fell in love with a girl in 2006 during the World Cup. So I'm assuming it was World Cup for you as well.
It was. So it was like the spring of my, at that point would have been, my junior year of high school. Right. So there was a young lady in my class and I will not reveal her name.
Rhode Island runs deep. Like, you don't want to get in trouble.
But she was a Portuguese young lady and you know how they feel about their soccer. So we just happened to have class together and she was a good friend, you know, but you know, we were very cool. And she just starts talking to me about Cristiano and Deco and Caballo and all of these, you know, Portuguese legends at the time. And the World Cup was coming up. And I think 2006, for like you mentioned, for a lot of us around here is when maybe it started to click. Maybe that's when the U.S. was a little more competitive and things like that. But I remember thinking like, oh, I'm going to be a Portugal fan now. And going into that 06 World Cup. And also, I think those who know me know, I love Nike. I am Nike out. And I remember at the time, Portugal, and to this day, and sadly, they just moved away from Nike, but had the best kits in the world. And I just love that red and green and white. It just looks so cool together. So I was like, all right, I'm going to root for Portugal in this 06 World Cup. And then I saw this guy named Lionel Messi. And I was like, wait a minute. I'm supposed to like Ronaldo, but I love this guy. he plays exactly how I would envision the game and what looks cool. And also, it's very fun to root for this small guy amongst all these other giants. And from that day, I became a Messi fan, and hence I became a Barcelona fan. And I really started to understand the kind of the crux of U.S. soccer and what that looked like and some of the names and faces. And it just kind of took off for me from there. And all through college, luckily, you know, my buddies I met at college were all soccer fans. So it was very easy to just kind of ride that wave. And I've never really looked back in terms of my soccer fandom. And, you know, growing up, like we mentioned, baseball, yeah, I played baseball my whole life. And I thought I was going to the majors. And that's what life had in store for me, and loved football and basketball and all those things. And then once the soccer bug kind of got a hold of me, it has not relinquished me yet. And soccer is far and away my favorite sport in terms of watching, in terms of just understanding and deciphering and just kind of, and you know this, and obviously what you all do with the podcast, just diving deep into every aspect of it. It's just so fun and rewarding.
No, I couldn't agree more. I don't know about the Messi Ronaldo part. I try to stay out of that argument just so that we don't lose or gain fans. But yeah. Well, then let's talk about the gig itself. You know, people don't realize this about you, but you're one of the hardest working people, maybe with the exception of the 22 players on the pitch at the moment. But you're all around the stadium during an in-day experience, whether you're interacting with the fans, you're running to set up activations, you're coming up to the control room, back out to the field. I guess if you had to describe your job in like one sentence or less, obviously that's one sentence, but how would you describe exactly what it is that you do on game day?
I'd like to think I don't know. When I think of the day, it's kind of like beautiful chaos is like the first thing that comes to mind. And I think you even in the press box can appreciate this in some ways of all the different voices, all the things going on. You obviously have a job that you need to do. But I think selfishly as soccer fans, we just want it. We also want to try to enjoy some of the soccer if we can. So I think, and this really goes back to the trust of the club. You know, as you know, things came together really, really quickly for the beginning of the season. And it wasn't until, you know, obviously I'd done work with the club and stayed close, but it wasn't until about a month out from the season that I officially, you know, got this role and got this title. So I remember, you know, our match with PC and the different things coming together, there really wasn't a flow. It was kind of like, we're going to figure this out as we go. We're going fast and loose, and we're going to make it what it is. And I think that really, really helped me because, you know, in moments of not uncertainty, but, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to jump in and be me. And I think by now the club trusts me and knows who I am. And I give them all that credit. It was very easy for me to make the role what I envisioned the role to be, but also what I thought the role should be for all of the fans and the supporters and everyone a part of the kind of ecosystem of an RAFC match. So for me, I love nothing more than when we kick off and, you know, my pregame hits are done and we don't have halftime yet. I love nothing more than just, I call it doing my laps, just getting around the stadium, bouncing over the supporter section, getting over to the other side of the pitch, you know, getting on the field and seeing the people and just having those conversations. It is far and away the most enjoyable aspect of my role, both at RAFC and at PC. I love just talking to the people and just seeing what brought you out today. You know, who brought you here today? How did you hear about the club? What are you excited to see? And that's, you know, young and old, from kids that are five to folks who are 85, just asking them, like, what brought you here today? Why, you know, what are you looking for? How, and in some ways, you know, trying to figure out how we can make their experience better, you know, not because the club wanted me to do that, but just because I want to say, okay, how can I make sure what I'm doing makes this the most enjoyable experience? Because I think especially at the beginning, there was folks who were at a soccer game, but not that they didn't know that they were at a soccer game, but they were just at a game, right? They were just there maybe because of the family, or again, it was a fun family, affordable outing. You know, those are hard to find these days. And that's the thing I love about RFC is you can take the whole family out. You don't have to break the bank and have a real fun day out. So those early days were really just understanding what was having people come. And then from there, me understanding, okay, how do I add a little bit to that? How do I make it more enjoyable? You know, there's no more fun than being able to pregame go up and find a young boy, young lady, and be like, hey, do you want to be on the big screen? Do you want to answer a trivia question? You know, do you want to be out there? And usually the reaction is like just shock and fear and scare, right? But then, you know, even me crouching down a little bit to get to eye level with them, you know, greeting them with a smile and the certainty of like, it's okay, you're going to be good. I'm going to be out there with you. Mom and dad are going to be right next to you. No matter what happens, you're a winner, everyone's going to cheer for you, it's going to be great. And then seeing kind of how that interaction comes, you know, the camera's about to come on, they're so nervous and scared. They have a great interaction. You know, all of Burn Stadium cheers for them. They light up, and now they have a core memory for the rest of their life that they're going to think back to when they were kids. And obviously, as hopefully their fandom grows with RAFC, they feel that much more a part of the fabric of the club because they had that moment. You know, and that was the cool thing for me, just doing my laps, you know, being able to give everybody, you know, a fist bump or a high five. And at first it was funny because they were like, hey, that's that guy. You know, that's the guy with the mic or that's the host. And then by the end of the day, like, that's Flanny. And to me, that means everything. That's far supersedes any other recognition or any other opportunity. Just having that kind of one-to-one. And if I can make their experience just that much more enjoyable, I've done my job.
I will have to admit, as being, I think, the only other person who's done your job because someone decided to go on a honeymoon, that is a very stressful day. So you are, one, and I think your wife would appreciate, you're never allowed to get married again.
No.
Two, you're never allowed to go on vacation during game weeks because, man, I kind of knew I had watched you for so long bounce around and do all the things, and then once I was in it, like after the game, someone came up and was like, oh, would you want to do this? I was like, absolutely not. It takes a certain type of crazy, and you are 100% that type of crazy in all the right ways. So kudos to everything you do.
And of course, there's hectic moments and crazy moments and things that you can't plan and you got to go off script. And I think that's, again, where I'm so appreciative of the club for their trust in me. There were so many moments in, you know, I think of my main man, Adrian, and Sabine and so many other folks at the club. Who are like, just be you. Like, we love who you are. We have you here for a reason. When all else fails and you don't know what else to do or there's no script for it, just be you. And I love that that's been the case since day one. And so anytime of those moments where things go a little chaotic, and shout out to my guys, Andrew and Matt, who are with me for all of my hits and all of the different things and give me so much support. They just kind of look at me as, do your thing, just be you. And that's, I think that's where it's good because I don't have to think. I can just be me and what comes natural. And I'd be lying if I said, and I love this, and I hope this never goes away, you know, and I you might feel this as well, as like those nerves and those butterflies, like driving to Burn and getting out of the car and, you know, all those things right before. And then as soon as I get in there, it just all goes away because it's like, okay, I'm with my people. I'm doing what I love. I can just be me. And there's no other way that I would want to approach it. And I think that's what, through all of the kind of chaos and all of the other things that could go wrong, that's what really centers me and just allows me to just be myself and just do what comes natural.
I think my nerves wash away after I've read and studied the pronunciation guide for the away players. But after I get through that.
And I've seen you, and kudos to you, because that is no easy task. And I know you do so much of that pre-work throughout the week to make sure you get there. But I've heard you in the press box and some of the others be like, how are you saying this? What is that? And you're like, this is that. This is the pronunciation. And, you know, it's no easy task. And also, you know, it's one of those things like the hay is in the barn, right? You do all the work throughout the week. You're ready for that moment, whatever comes. And that's I think also the fun part about it too.
Tommy and Mike would never acknowledge this, but I am the wind beneath their wings when it comes to the pronunciations for their play-by-play calling.
Absolutely.
So I do want to ask. Guys,
they do an amazing job too, man.
They are
amazing job.
I hope nothing but just important unlocks for them in the year to come, because if this club is going to, you know, build upon the foundation, having dedicated play-by-play callers, you know, creating that second level of on-air personality is going to be the key to kind of just unlocking the rest of this for the rest of the state. I do want to ask you, because I have a specific memory that comes to mind, but I'd be curious for you. You know, we're lost in the sauce. We're doing all of this operations and production work on the day. And there were some struggles at times, right? And in the moment, there was like hair pulling, there was like teeth grinding, there was like eye rolling of like, how are we going to get this debacle or this confusion sorted out? If you look back on the year, what was a moment that you struggled through to put on a quality aspect of the game day production that you can now look back and laugh at? Because I have one that always comes to mind, but I'm curious what yours would be.
So I think the first thing that kind of comes to mind, and I remember us talking about this, and obviously, you know, kudos to Defiance, the best supporters group in the world. The Defiance man of the match, right, was obviously something that we'd always do every game. And there was no kind of aspect for me or like an official club aspect with that, you know, but having conversations with Adrian and Thomas and some of the others, like, how do we how do we try to, I don't want to say elevate it because it's just natural and organic and also just kind of gritty in what you love about soccer, the way they did it. But it's like, how cool would it be for everyone to hear from that individual who just got that award, just got that amazing recognition, you know, right after the heat of the battle, they're speaking from the heart. We know it's going to be meaningful. How do we now kind of get that aspect? And I remember talking about it, and ironically enough, and, you know, my wife gives me a hard time about this all the time, as obviously, you know, a Puerto Rican and Dominican woman who's fluent in Spanish, that I my Spanish is not good. You know, I only know how to say bad words, unfortunately, which is good when you're listening to the soccer, as you can probably appreciate, because you know what they're saying. When you're trying to interview somebody, that's not the best way. And I remember the very first time we were going to interview Defiance Man of the Match, it was none other than our man Frank Nodarce. And I remember Frank coming over, and I got to give Chico some credit because he was right next to him. And we were trying to like workshop, like, hey, Frank, are you comfortable answering some questions? I can kind of struggle through. We can get a translate. And you could tell Frank was like, wait a minute. Nobody told me about this. I wasn't prepared for this. I just played 90 minutes, you know, busted my butt on the pitch. And that first one didn't go well. We didn't have a chance to ask him some questions. You know, the camera was there and was ready. And I think we're even on camera, just him and I kind of whispering to one another, trying to figure out if we can make it work. And it didn't work. And I remember at the moment, I was like, damn, this thing might not go as planned or as well as we thought it would. And then thankfully, you know, the next man of the match, I forget exactly who it was. I want to say it might have been Cappy. It might have been Coke. I'm not sure. But we were able to have a really cool and organic thing. And I remember, you know, sitting with Adrian and figuring out, like, what are we going to ask? And I was like, I got it. Don't worry about it. Like, I, you know, to your point, and we talked a little bit about it earlier, even though I'm doing all that work, I'm still watching the match. And I'm not turning away. And I want to know what's happening. And I want to see all the moments, not just the goals, but the runs and the defense and all the different things that happen. So I would, you know, obviously throughout the match, you know, be watching and have a good idea of what's going on. You know, around that 80 to 85th minute, I make my way down to the Defiance and talk to Chris and Irving, be like, all right, who's our player of the match? Who is it? And I'd usually find out right around stoppage time. And then I'm quickly jotting down, okay, what are these two or three things I got to ask them? And it came together so authentic. I remember the first one we did it where the player was still on the pitch in front of the boards. And I was like, no, this isn't it. We got to get them on the other side of the boards, right under these banners, right under these flags, to make this really happen. And I think the time that ironically enough came together when Coach Cano got the award, and I'm sure you remember this, he wanted no parts of it. He's like, no, this isn't for me. We know how he is. He said, this is about the guys on the pitch. This has nothing to do with me. The players literally had to drag him over to the boards. And there's this amazing photo. It's my favorite photo of the year, where Cano's got his fist pumped to the supporters screaming. And I'm like this close to him, basically screaming right back in his face, because it was just that pure emotion. And that's where I lose myself, where I'm like, I need to hone in and focus, but the emotion just gets a hold of you. But that's what made it so natural and organic, and being right in front of the supporters, to the fact where they're drowning me out as I'm asking the question. But that's the best part about it. And it's just natural and organic. So I remember that moment with Frank. I was like, oh, man, this might not go how we planned. But then every week after that was amazing. And it was arguably my favorite part of the year, and definitely my favorite part of every match.
I do remember those. And I remember at the beginning, it was like, okay, is this going to work? I remember you were having mic problems because those wireless mics were fighting you.
Yes.
And I will say, though, by the end, you were asking such like important questions that I would kind of flag that as, okay, well, I'm not going to go ask that again in the press scrum, because he's already answered this. So thanks, Flanny, for getting the deep cut there in front of 5,000 fans. No, it's all good. I would say my favorite memory now that I laugh at was definitely the national anthem debacle. because like when, like, people will never understand the amount of panic that went on in that control room where, you know, I think we've mentioned a little bit about it in one of the early episodes, probably like right after it happened, but basically the performer was nowhere to be found. And we learned very importantly that once the performer were like T-minus 10 minutes, someone needs to handcuff that person to like the front area of the staging, because the performer just went and kind of toured around and was saying hi to people.
She was just hanging out, doing her thing. And similarly, you were in the press box and I was on the pitch right there. And it was just, everyone's like, where is she? Where is she? Where is she? And nobody could get eyes on her.
We were playing Where's Waldo in the crowd, seeing if we could find her. And then when we found her, she was in such a position that to get her on, like, someone was like, it's going to take her 3 minutes to get to the field. And what people don't understand is that even with ESPN Plus, there are broadcast time requirements. It it's linked probably to like sports betting and everything else. You have to go or you pay a fine.
Yep.
And so we sat there. We didn't have the audio, like just the instrumental and background. It was all these things you had to learn by going through the experience one time. And I continue to thank Defiant 1636 for their a cappella rendition of it. So
they said, though, they absolutely saved it. And I felt bad. Obviously, I felt bad for her after. And obviously, she was looking forward to the moment. And just, you know, it miscommunication, things didn't come together. But yeah, that was definitely a moment where I was like, someone's in trouble. It's Defiance, man. They don't miss an opportunity again because they're just so engaged. And again, before kickoff, they're ready whenever they need to jump in and be of support. It was cool, but again, just organic, right? Like they knew there was a job to be done and they jumped in and saved the day.
Absolutely. So before we move on to Tidewater, I have this question. I've actually been asked it a lot, but I want to clear the record from you because you're the one that matters the most when it comes to the factual assessment of it. I get asked all the time if the taco shuffle is rigged. Can you clear some light? Is the California taco shuffle rigged?
It is not rigged. It is not. In right hand of God, it is not rigged. I have no idea what taco it's going to be. And I remember early in the year, that thing was flying. And I remember talking to Matt and Andrew and coming off after one and being like, there's no way anyone's going to get this. It's going way too quick. And we had to slow it down just a little bit. And I tried to, and I tell every contestant this, I'm like, I don't know where it is. I'm going to follow it to the best of my abilities and try to get it myself. So that way, if you're struggling a little bit, or if you look to me, I might try to, you know, mumble or word, you know, the number to you or give you a little something. You know, I'm like, the one thing is, you know, bless the crowd. They're trying, but you're going to get 30% one, 30% two, 30% three. It's never going to be uniform. So I'm like, just trust your gut. I'm like, even if you are wrong, I'm going to try to say something to take it off you and throw the blame back on me or just turn the attention to something else. But it is absolutely not rigged. Our contestants do not know what number it is. I don't know what number it is, which makes it fun and enjoyable, but also a little scary in the moment. And thankfully, you know, to the powers that be, slowed it down just a touch. To where we were to get through the year and have a lot of winners. And I think that's why most folks think it's rigged because, you know, we have some folks who always get it. And it's funny because at PC, we do the same thing. You know, we have our Dunkin' Cup shuffle now. And it's the same way. We're like, I don't know. And I'm trying to follow. And we're gonna do this in tandem and hope we get it right. And if not, we're going to make the best of it. You're still going to leave with an awesome prize. You're going to be able to go to the truck and get some free tacos after this, which nobody can pass up. So, no, absolutely not rigged.
Did you ever, and you got to be honest, did you ever lose it? Did you ever get it wrong in your internal guessing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There was at least a few times throughout the year. And there was a couple times where I thought I was convinced I had it right. And the contestant was like, I think this. And I'm like, you know what? Follow your gut. Because at least if you're wrong, you can't yell at me. But no, there's absolutely a few times where I'm like, oh, it's definitely two. And then they unveil one. And I'm like, oh, damn, I just screwed this whole thing up.
We're just getting too old, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
But let's move on. Let's talk about the future. It's now going to be 2025, so we got to talk about the most exciting part of the year to come, and that's Tidewater. And you know, if I'm being honest, I think you are probably, outside of the individuals responsible for the oversight or construction of this facility, I think you're probably the person that has spent the most time on that hallowed ground. You know, from the very first time you got to step into it to the most recent, I don't even know, like I wouldn't be surprised if you told me yesterday. What is the stadium as you have watched it kind of become what it is now? What have you felt? What have you experienced? What have you seen? What's something that the videos and the hype reels that we get access to doesn't do it justice?
Yeah, I think the cool thing, and it's funny enough, the first time I was actually in there was our steel raising ceremony.
Yeah, really?
That was the first time I was in there. And I had obviously seen, I drove around it. I mean, I'm surprised I didn't get arrested for like trespassing, just how much I would, you know. And I think of the folks right across the street at Blackstone Academy, a school that I actually used to work at, ironically enough, now has the best seat in the house to see the stadium. And I remember kind of perusing around, or I would mention driving over the Division Street Bridge and every day trying to pinpoint what looked different day to day. So the steel raising ceremony was the first time I was in there. And I always think back to that moment because I think that was a pivotal moment in our season. Because I'll never forget Coach Cano getting up there and immediately cracking. Now, mind you, we had just come off this run of draws, obviously, the draw kings that we are. And it wasn't the best time on the pitch. And, it, you know, wasn't, you know, things were a little hot under the collar for a little bit. And I remember Coach getting up there and making a joke and being like, I'd love to promise a win. I can't, but I can promise you a draw. And everyone kind of laughing and taking a deep breath. And after that, we were just on fire after that moment. That was the first time I was in there, and not only as an official capacity getting hosted, but just in general. So I remember that day is always kind of a banner day for me. And as you mentioned, I've been able to be in there a lot since with our stadium scoop pieces and going to different events, or even just myself trying to sneak over there and get a glimpse of it in an unofficial capacity. But I think folks are going to absolutely love it. There is not a bad seat in the house, which I think is the first thing. It doesn't matter where you sit, whether you're in the field pavilions, whether you have a field seat, whether you are anywhere in a loge, top to bottom, there's not a bad seat in the house. I think folks, you know, you obviously can appreciate a bit. You know the water's there, right? But when you're actually up in that press box, the vantage point you're going to have, Matt, you know, being even higher than that and seeing how beautiful it is to see that entire skyline. Again, I mentioned that Apex building and how cool that is. Being up on the sky deck and seeing that, for me, gave me chills. Because it felt like, wow, this is home. I'm in my backyard and I get the best view of not only the city, but my city. So there's not a bad seat in the house. Everything is obviously state of the art, as you can imagine, from all of the suites and all of the different levels. And the cool thing is, you know, you can go there and want to, for instance, it might be an event and you might not be the biggest soccer fan, but I think just the overall feel and the way the stadium is set up and built and the structure, it's going to be hard for you to take your eyes off of the pitch. And I think that's the cool thing. Even, you know, getting to walk down the tunnel where the players are going to come out and seeing it all open up and seeing not only the field and then the seats, but then seeing the city in the background. I cannot wait to see it packed 10,000 strong. And obviously May 3rd, now we have our date to think of and know when we're going to get to see it all come together and get to see, you know, a banner and hardware and all those things. I just cannot wait to see, especially I think of the supporter section. You know, looking at that, you know, we know how intimidating they made it at Burn this year. Now amplify that by 10 in terms of all of those opposing goalkeepers who are going to have to suffer through that. I cannot wait for everyone to just see it come to fruition. And then you think of all of the different aspects of it, right? The Riverwalk and how beautiful that's going to be. The pedestrian bridge when that comes to really bring all of the aspects of the city together. The food and drinks and all of the different hospitality options that are going to come with time. I think that's the cool thing is we're getting stadium in year one. And then, you know, kind of every year incrementally after that, you're going to get a new piece to the puzzle. And far away, I mean, I already think it's the best stadium in the league. I'm taking that to the grave and hasn't even fully come to fruition yet. But then now, you know, in the last couple of weeks, seeing the pitch down, I think that was for a lot of people, it was like, okay, now it's real. We were actually going to play soccer here. So I think that's been the best part to see it. And again, we haven't even opened it up. So imagine when it has all the bells and whistles and lights. And I also love that the stadium is set up in our team colors. So you're going to see, you know, the amber and blue and bay blue everywhere you go when you're in there. I just can't wait for folks to get in there and really get bit by the bug. I think the same way those of us who've been able to be in there and experience it, from the background and also from the ground up have been able to.
I'm really interested. I kind of geek out on the infrastructure side of things, like the locker rooms, yeah, the recovery areas, what like the front office administrative side, yeah, of things will look like. Cause you know, I've seen every shot possible of the seats. And I think the only thing I can't quite grasp my mind around is that luxury like hall that I saw in one of the videos you did. Like, I understand it in the 3D print, but like seeing it in person will kind of be the final, like, oh, okay, that's what you were trying to accomplish. But I want to see how it nestles into the rest of the community, right? Like, mm-hmm, it's that walking across the street from, you know, parking somewhere within the neighborhoods of Pawtucket and then like walking into the stadium. Like, those are the final pieces too that like I just want to like see it come to life. But I agree, once the pitch was down, a lot of people started getting really quiet when it comes to the naysayers. Like, oh yeah, this is happening.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's been the best, and that's what I'm so excited. I cannot wait to see the first supporters walk to the stadium, right? And you know where the offices are. It's a straight shot. It's one street, and you're right there. And it's also so cool because it's gritty. You're going under a bridge, you know, to get to the stadium. You kind of pop out and hear where everything is. We also know how amazing it is with the water there. We saw, you know, again, we mentioned that steel raising ceremony. Chip coming in on the boat with the supporters. Like, that also excites me to see how we can use the aspects of the water, obviously tying into who we are, you know, in our anchors and everything, and what that's going to look like when it comes to fruition, and not only, and also just organically what we're going to come up with. You know, I've had so many conversations with Irv and Natesky and so many of the supporters and these cool ideas that they have, that I think we all share similar in the club as well, to see that come to fruition. I think that first supporters walk, I'm literally like looking forward and thinking of that day. Obviously, we know the day now, May 3rd, what that's going to look like. I think for me, that is, you know, I'm probably going to have a hard time keeping my emotions intact that day. I'm not going to lie.
I'll be right there with you. And I think kind of as we wrap things up here, you know, looking ahead, let's just talk schedule for a second. I won't hold you to it. Like, I don't expect you to have memorized every single game at this point. But what were you saw the schedule release a couple weeks ago. What were the highlights? What were the kind of eyebrow raising moments for you? What are you the most excited about for 2025 schedule?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I think May 3rd, right? We know first home match, what that's going to look like. I don't know that Kano and the team loves this, but I love that we're on the road for 6 weeks. I love that we get to continue that road warrior mentality that obviously took us through the playoffs and that amazing run. So obviously that's the first one. You know, looking at the Hartford Derbies, you know, being so close to one another now with the Jägermeister Cup, you know, being able to basically see, and it's so funny, right? Like you think of like your neighbors, you know, it's a perfect example of like, you got to see them every day. You know, it's going to be so cool that within a couple weeks span, we're going to get to see them a few times. I think that's going to be awesome. You know, again, thinking of the Jägermeister Cup, Portland in some of those closer, you know, games and what that'll look like. Westchester, you know, shout out to our guy, Connor, you know, that those sorts of games, I think that's going to add another layer of that kind of territorial piece. Obviously, we talk a lot about the Revs being so close and what that looks like. I think now being able to kind of spread our wings a little bit more in the New England area and even into the tri-state area is going to be fun. Obviously, I was looking forward to that Colorado match. I was hoping that was going to be something. I know you guys talked about
it. I can't believe we don't have that.
Yeah, that was the one that was, I think, disappointing. You know, probably the only big disappointment and the glaring thing, one of the first things I looked for on the schedule. But I think right around that July, obviously July 5th is a big one for me. I'm thinking of like fireworks. And I think, again, it reminds me, again, a lot of my childhood being kind of in that same area of where I would see fireworks. We obviously had an amazing fireworks display this past 4th of July match. So I'm excited for that one. July 5th, I think, will be a really fun one for the community. And I think there might even be some folks who might not make it to the stadium until that match, right? Like that might be the first time if they don't make it earlier, and that might be their moment. But I think that's going to be the cool thing this year, seeing which of those games, you know, obviously this year, you know, this past season, you think of the first match, you know, you think of some of the matches along the way. You think of Hartford. You think of the thrashing of Miami leading us into the playoffs and so many of those things. But I'm excited to see what those games, you know, looking back a year from now, what those games were, whether it was from a community standpoint, the buy-in of, you know, this was a sellout, you know, and everyone was here. And now, you know, what does it look like at the water cooler on Monday morning? How many more people are talking about RAFC than they were, you know, the Friday before? So those are those first few matches that jump out. But I also, I'm already envisioning, you know, the hardware being set up and the team walking out, and seeing that it's going to be so amazing. And then to hear you, you know, be able to be on the mic for some of those moments is going to be, so
whoa,
I hope
I'm trying
to speak it into existence here.
For those that don't know, there was a survey that went out at the end of the season for the season ticket members. And Flanny, both you and I we had to be evaluated and yes, rated. So I gave you the highest remarks. And when they asked, like, what could we do differently as a club? I was like, if you let go of Flanny, I didn't even put myself in there. If you let go of Flanny, we riot. So, you know, and we will. Just I'm going to use this platform now. If you are not the continued voice and face of RIFC, Defiance 1636, we burn Tidewater down. We've burned ships. Let's burn a stadium
that's
down.
That's it. Right? That was one of my favorite lines too from one of the videos. It's like, you know, we burn ships. Like we don't mess around here. No, same. And likewise, Matt, I think we, you know, again, for us just being folks who eat, sleep, and breathe it from just a personal standpoint and what it means to us, I think that adds that added layer to where I know this from being in, you know, making my rounds during the game, folks hearing your voice when you make the announcements and you announce a team, or, you know, even when we have a goal celebration, like it's just palpable. You can feel that energy throughout. And it was cool. At first, I remember I hadn't filled out the survey yet. And it was Ryan Healy. I want to give him some love. I had saw him at an event and he was just like, I gave you great remarks. And that was, like, oh damn, I'm on that thing. And then, you know, I opened it up and went throughout and, you know, obviously left my remarks for everyone, but that was cool. And I was joking with the club. I'm like, I need to see the raw data on that. I need to see what our scores were, both myself and Matt, because I, you know, not to pump us up or pat us on the back, I'd like to think we're going to have some of the highest remarks on that survey overall. And that's what we've heard. I'm sure you've heard the same thing. I've heard that at all the events and people being like, Flanny, we gave you nothing but great remarks. And to me, that means everything. That is, for me, the kind of bow on the season to know that it was successful. Obviously, we know how successful it was on the pitch. But from, you know, for to take a moment to be very selfish, to know that folks appreciated my small impact each and every game day, and to know the impact that folks had on me to want to get back. You know, I'm glad that the offseason, it's too long, but I'm glad it's not as long as, you know, some of the other sports we have. Or, you know, I think of PC, it's nice that we're going to be right back at it, where, you know, within a couple months. And obviously the pieces of the puzzle pieces on the board are already moving. And hearing Kano a couple weeks ago when he was on with you guys talking about the offseason and things he's excited about has only gotten us more excited to see, you know, what more signings we're going to have and what that product on the field is going to look like. Because coming off of last year, I think there's very few tweaks and changes we need to make to be able to get over that ultimate hump and be able to call ourselves USL champs.
Yeah, we actually did an interview with Sean Carey. It would have dropped while we were recording this, but there's definitely some interesting signings on the horizon. There's been some looks abroad in Europe. There's potentially a young academy product that could be here for several years. I've heard that we should have a signing in the next couple of days to kind of start sprinkling these in, but we shall see. I guess what it comes down to at the end of the day, Flanny, is like, you're great. I like to consider myself at least good, but we both get completely eclipsed by Chip. So we got to put credit where credit goes, right?
This listen, if you don't know Chip by now, you clearly don't know RFC. I mean, the impact that Chip has each and every game day. You know, I talk about myself and how it's cool to be able to talk to the kids. You know, they see Flanny, that's great. They see Chip, they just light up like a Christmas tree, and it's so fun. And Chip has done an amazing job. And the thing I love seeing, you know, seeing Chip's kind of grow throughout the year again is organic and authentic. I think of the aspect. I think of the pre-match cartwheels and like just the little things that Chip has added throughout the year to really, I think, be a key figure, right? Like I think of the Independence Man, right? And I think obviously one, that amazing TIFO that our supporters put together for Hartford, but like that's a symbol of our state, right? I'd like to think as time goes on, Chip is going to be that same symbol. You think of Paws and Socks, who even now McCoy's not there, but you can still drive by and still see Paws and Socks. So I think Chip is going to be that same figure in our community, as you mentioned earlier, for the next phase of what Pawtucket is, of what Rhode Island is going to be. And folks have just rallied around Chip, and it's been so beautiful to see. Chip cannot get enough credit, and all of the powers that be and the brain behind all of it, the way Chip has kind of come together throughout the year, you know, Chip's become a folk hero, and it's been so, so cool to see.
Yeah, he needs his own social media account. Yes. At one point, because that's the great mascots in any sport. When they've made it, they get their own independent handles. So hopefully one day soon we'll see Chip with his own socials. In the meantime, I want to ask you, are you going to any of the away games this year? Are we going to get Flanny on the road?
That is the plan. This year was a little difficult. You know, as you mentioned, the wedding, there was a couple games that I had planned to go to and things kind of fell through last minute. So that is my goal. It's funny because I'm pretty superstitious. I remember like a few of the early watch parties I didn't attend, and not because I didn't want to, but because I am so superstitious when it comes to my sports teams, where it's like, and I don't know if it's superstition as much as I don't want to like channel my passion in the wrong way in front of somebody else or scare somebody, especially, you know, they see nice, lovable Flanny and then they hear me cussing at a watch party. So those first few, I was glued to my couch and watching, because that's just what I was so used to and accustomed to my teams. But then slowly but surely I got out there and it was at different watch parties and different community. And I think that was the best. And I think back to that Eastern Conference final. And obviously I would have loved to have been there in person with all of you amazing supporters, but being there and literally being able to turn left and right and give so many hugs and experience that with everyone and pop the streamers and the balloons and all the things. So I remember grabbing Nate and just giving him the biggest bear hug ever. And that was so cool because it just adds that added layer of that community, right? And being able to experience those moments together. I talked earlier about the little ones having those core memories and things they hold on to. Me as not so little anymore, that was a core memory for me. And all of those moments, you know, even the final, watching it with everyone at the Guild, and didn't go our way. But, you know, again, I remember Nate coming up to me at halftime and being like, it's good, we got this, we're going to make it happen. And just that passion and that just never say die attitude was, I think, just what made it what it is. So I've already talked to the wife about it. I was like, babe, I was like, you know, we got married this past year. That was the goal. But this year we got to get on the road and go experience this. And I think I got to give a shout out to the pool party the Pools who made it to every away match, and they were one of the many families that I made it a point every game to go talk to them pre-match and during the match. And I remember when they started getting on the road and going to every match, and how this thing, it just kind of sucked them in. And I remember having those conversations with them early on, and they were like, you know, we like soccer, and it the bug just bit them, and they were at every home game and then every away match. And there's so many folks like that, that has really made it what it is. And when I think of RAFC, like, sure, I think of the product on the field, I think of the players, I think of Kano, but I think of the Pools, and I think of the other families and the supporters, who made the game day experience for me what it was. So those are the folks I think about, and hearing their stories about getting on the road. And also, I don't know how this has come to be. Maybe it's, you know, we're the expansion team, and now that we're winning, folks won't feel the same. But I remember looking at the comments and fans from all over the league rooting for us at throughout the playoffs. As their team was out, they were like, hey, we love everything about what you guys are doing. It's so organic. You have the passion. You show up for your team no matter where they're playing. And it was cool to get that respect from the other clubs to be like, okay, like, you guys are new here. You know, it's easy to pick on the new team, the expansion team. But throughout the year, to see people be like, wow, you're building something organic and authentic. And as just soccer fans and as fans of our clubs, we can appreciate that. I think that was the coolest thing. And I'm excited to experience that in person with some of those away supporters and obviously our own supporters.
You know, I think it's such a great point that you bring up, because I think when you get 15 draws, you don't rub that many people the wrong way. Like, you walk out of it with a point. You're like, okay, we'll see you next time.
Yeah. It's like, and that respect. You like, you walk by each other, you kind of give that head nod of like, all right, well, nobody's on the bad side of it today.
Right. Right. We only really offended Louisville in year one. So I completely agree with that.
That is our home stadium now. So
we need to keep doing that. Exactly. And I'm so glad, by the way, you brought up the Pool party, because for the casual fan that listens and haven't met them, you're missing out. Oh. They are probably they're fan royalty at this point.
Yes, they are.
They carve the logo into the back of their heads when they get haircuts.
I saw that. Oh my God, it was so good.
It's just incredible. But the fun point, kind of like bringing this full circle, they were PawSox fans.
Yes.
And they were dedicated to just going out and experiencing baseball in the community. And when that was taken away, they replaced it with this, and they didn't know soccer. They didn't care about the sport, and then they made this community for themselves. They adapted it into what they want it to be. So, like, I guess if we were to think about it, like, if we can get more Pools into the party, we're going to be just fine as a club and as a community in a whole. So, Flanny, I want to thank you so much for jumping on today. I appreciate it. I can't wait. I'm going to commit this to you now. We'll see you at Westchester in April. You have to go now. So Irvin's going to kidnap you in a van, and you're going to be on the way. But
he is that kind of guy, and that's why we love Irv.
he's absolutely that kind of guy. But I want to give you the final word. What's the message you have to fans in this new year? We're coming into 2025 hot. How are you feeling, and what do you want to tell fans?
I just want to tell folks to buy in. I mean, just buy in. I think if you've been a fan, if you went to one match this year, like one, I want to say thank you, because I think you've done a small part to make this what it's become. But just please buy in. I mean, I think if you are a fan of just community and you love your community, there's a reason to show up and be here for this. If you love soccer, obviously there's a reason to show up, because we play wicked good soccer and we put an amazing product on the pitch that I think anybody can be, you know, rally around. You know, we have a man who's leading it in Kano, who you can't not love the guy. Like, you just can't not love the guy just as a man. You forget coach, GM, all those aspects. Just as a man, you cannot love and respect the guy. But also, it's something new and shiny and beautiful. And I think for those folks who will go and show up, you're going to have a good time. Whether you're there for the soccer, you're there for the camaraderie, you're just there for a family fun day out in the community, that is affordable and enjoyable. Just buy in and show up. And I think everyone who I've talked to has showed up for one game, finds their way back for a second and a third and a fourth, and then is on the road, and then is really just buying in all aspects of the club. And also, I mean, it's a really cool thing. I think we have, you know, professional soccer in our backyard, and because, you know, being the USL championship and a lot of these players and even coaches being maybe earlier and younger in their career, you know, they're not, I don't want to say the term jaded, but like they are appreciative of also the opportunity, and they are appreciative of the community embracing them the way they have. That was some of my favorite thing, is talking to the players and them just being so welcomed and appreciative. You know, when you think of Koke and you think of so many others who, you know, some can move across the world, right? Like, you know, I think of those people who've been embraced and are part of the community. And I think that is a microcosm of who we are in Pawtucket, who we are in Rhode Island. You know, all 39 cities and towns, I think, really embody that, you know, kind of us against the world mentality. But also, if you're with us, you're with us forever, and we take you in for who you are and what you are. And I think that's where folks can really, no matter who you are, what makes you tick, you know, there's a place for you here in this community. And I that's just my rallying cry is, you know, come out and show up, you know, on, you know, May 3rd, but show up before that. Come to those opportunities, come to those sessions at the Guild where you get to talk to the players and the coaches and the other members of the community. And I think there's no way you're not going to get bit by that RIFC bug if you do show up.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Flanny, where can fans find you in your journeys in all of the different sporting avenues you're in, as well as your podcast?
That's right. Yeah. So you can find me at Yeah Flanny on Twitter, Instagram, I think TikTok. I don't know. Wife made it. I gotta get on there before it might not be a thing anymore. But that's where you can find me. As you mentioned earlier, everything is Pro Wrestling Podcast with my main man, Mike D. And as I call him, my kayfabe cousin, Flanabam. We do a really fun thing with pro wrestling each week where, again, pro wrestling is everything. So we talk about all the different aspects of pop culture and fashion and just where it kind of intersects with pro wrestling. You know, you can find me at the Amp with my Friartown family throughout the whole men's basketball, PC men's basketball season. And then obviously, you know, May 3rd, you know, if all goes well.
We will see you
in stadium at Tidewater Landing. Giving a good old RIFC chant to all of our supporters. And again, you'll see me in the community, as you mentioned. I love to be a part of my community and impact things in any way that I can. So I guess this is my pitch. Anyone out there who thinks I can be of assistance to them or support of them in anything they're doing that involves our community or just good work and good people, I'd love to be supportive in any way that I can. So thank you for that. And Matt, I would be remiss if I didn't give you and Jason an amazing shout out for the impact you've had on this community. I think this podcast has been amazing. And you all were doing this before anything was there. You know, it was one of those things where you all were on the forefront of getting out there. And I think of all the other just organic things, it sprouted from there. So I cannot give the two of you enough credit and kudos for your work, your tireless work throughout the year. I know it's not easy to prep for these matches and know what's happening on all these teams and what they're starting in 11 looks like and their bench and their tactics and, you know, their run of play at the time. You guys put the work in, and that does not go unnoticed by folks like me and I think all of the fans of not only the pod, but of everything you guys do. So I have to give you guys so much love and credit. I think the work you've done has added so much more to what this club is and what this club can be moving forward.
Flanny, I need you on more often just to make me feel better about my life. So
I got definitely, you, brother. I got you.
Definitely going to have you back on soon. Until then, make sure to check out our friends over at The Blazing Musket for all of your New England soccer coverage and RIFC news at theblazingmusket.com. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Threads, Blue Sky, at RIFC Podcast. Are you on Blue Sky?
I'm not, but I need to.
I got to
make my way over. Yeah, I'm not even on Twitter anymore these days because what is even Twitter these days? So
nobody knows. It's AI everything. We've got the Instagram at Raising Anchor and, of course, our own website, RaisingAnchorPodcast.com. Flanny, anchors up. Can't wait to see you in May announcing and just entertaining us all to a fully sold out stadium at Tidewater. Do we have any theories, any guesses on the name for the stadium yet?
I don't.
Duncan. It's got to be Duncan.
So many different things in my head of what it could be or what it should be or what it shouldn't be. And I don't know. I'm waiting to be surprised. I'm curious if you have some thoughts.
I think it's Duncan. I think the Dunk lost the Amp, and I think they want back in. And I think Dunkin' Donuts, it's synonymous with New England, with Rhode Island, with Pawtucket, and we need a dunk back in our lives. But that's my guess. But
I'm
who
not
knows?
Mad at we'll it. I am not mad at it. And there is, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, a small pocket of the population who that will bring them in, just that alone. And if that's the case, I'm all for it.
Do you have any guesses? Do you want to put something out there?
Man.
Which we can hold you to later.
It's funny, and maybe I'll throw this out as maybe like this could work in multiple facets. I think of Hasbro. And I think of Hasbro, obviously a lot of talk about maybe them leaving.
Yeah.
Can we pull them back in this way and somehow engage them there? I think of McCoy as being like a pillar of my community, Hasbro being in Pawtucket. And, you know, my mom worked in Memorial Hospital for a long time. I got to shop at the Hasbro store in the main offices as a kid.
Way back.
And I remember that being another core memory. So like selfishly for a bunch of different factors. I would love if somehow that was in the mix and that kind of kept them here and really helped to bring us, catapult us into the future. So that would be cool. But yeah, I think there's so many cool things and ways it can go. But I think to your point, as long as it's organic and authentic to who we are here, I think that's all I can ask for.
Well, if it's organic, then it's got to be Benny's.
Oh, well, please.
It's got to be Benny's. That's
give me Benny's. I'll take a building 19. You know,
yeah, there you go.
Yo, yeah. Jax, give me all the childhood spots, man. I would love that.
Awesome. Well, until then, Flanny, again, thanks for everything. Anchors up, and we'll see you all soon.
Anchors up.